Chicago's very own Bob Surratt starts your day. WGN.
It is 6:40. Time for our Monday morning house call from Dr. Kevin Most. We got to get you your own jingle. Hi, Dr. Yeah. Most. How you doing?
I'm doing good, Bobby. I thought you were working on that this week.
Yeah. I'll follow up.
Yeah.
We were talking earlier about the positivity rate this area, 6%. And let's see, half of Illinois' 102 counties have hit their designated coronavirus warning level. And from your point of view, are you more concerned about the positivity rate or what's happening in the hospitals as far as the number of patients because of the virus, Dr. Most?
Yeah, right now, Bob, I think we're at a tipping point. If anybody's ever read the Malcolm Gladwell book, unfortunately, the numbers are not looking promising in either area. And I'll just give you an example. You know, we've been talking about this for months, obviously. At Central DuPage, we hit a high of 97 with 50 patients in the ICU, and that was in, you know, May, June. We got it down to a low of 8 with none in the ICU 3 weeks ago. We are back up today over 40 with 7 in the ICU. Hmm. We're also seeing that anybody who's coming in for a test, for a procedure, whether it be surgery or colonoscopy, we test them prior to them coming to the hospital, and now we're seeing somewhere between a 10 and 20% positive rate on those individuals. So that's we're hitting some very concerning times and some very concerning numbers right now.
So anyone who says these numbers just reflect the fact that we're doing more testing, that's way off base, because we have a lot to be concerned about, don't we?
Well, absolutely. You know, if it were just we were doing more testing, then you would expect the numbers at the hospitals to stay pretty stagnant. And we're not seeing that at all anywhere across the country. So it's great that we're doing the testing. It's a matter of when we do get the test and we find out the positive person, many of them asymptomatic, as we know, people coming in for, like I said, any of the procedures, that we isolate them. The bad thing is that those same individuals who are testing positive have been out in the public and in their homes probably for 3 or 4 or 5 days before. So definitely a concern that we're starting to see so many positives that now we're again starting to see some of this vulnerable population be infected.
All we can say is wear your mask, wash your hands with soap and water, and maintain social distancing, right?
Yeah, and, you know, if people look at it and say, well, you know what, I really, so what, we're seeing all this, you know, out in the public, and boy, I know a lot of people have had it and had minimal symptoms, if any, and I can tell people that is not one of the reasons that we're doing this. It's certainly one of them, but the hospital system in this country cannot afford the stress that we are looking at in the next 6 to 8 weeks. The staff can't afford it. The systems themselves can't afford it. And when I say afford, I do not mean financially at all. I mean mentally and physically. So we're trying to, you know, get our staff rested right now, because we know we are going to have a very tough time coming up here between November and December.
Exactly. Let's talk about this new study out of Northwestern's Feinberg School of Medicine that helps clarify the true risk to kids impacted by COVID-19. What did we learn from this research, Dr. Most?
Yeah, this is a study between Feinberg School of Medicine and Lurie Children's Hospital, you know, one of our partners down here in Chicago, one of the finest pediatric hospitals in the country. And what they did is they said, hey, you know, everyone's been talking about how kids are protected from this virus. And they said, hey, guys, that is not true. Certainly children will get it, and they may have less severe illness, but we have the same concern with children as far as comorbidities. So kids that have diabetes, asthma, obesity, those are the ones that are getting COVID and actually ending up in the intensive care units. So children with comorbidities are still at risk, and pediatric patients are not protected against COVID. They will get it, but just have less symptoms.
Gotcha. Yeah, good to mention that for sure. You know, with the cold weather, it actually feels good to wear the mask. And a number of people have asked about wearing scarves. We got a text the other day. Let's see. Bob, perhaps Dr. Most could comment on this. When the weather is cold, more people are going to be wearing a scarf around their faces as a mask substitute. I think this won't be as effective because people will slip a scarf off as they go about their activities, unlike a mask, which is more securely fixed on the face. What does the doctor think about this?
Yeah, they're absolutely spot on. A couple things. One, many scarves are not thick enough to really protect us. Now, probably the upside is that we have a lot of people that once they're outside, they take their mask off so that they're walking without a mask because they're outside and they feel more comfortable. But you know how crowded the streets can get in Chicago, especially around the holidays. So wearing a scarf at that time would certainly be helpful. We have to remember that the scarf needs to at least, you know, as the mask, be close to it, to our face and cover our nose and our mouth, because we are trying to protect others from a disease that we may have. So often people wear a scarf, and like the texter said, you know, it's very loose around your face because it wouldn't be comfortable wrapped around your nose and mouth. So, you know, we don't think bandanas are very well because they're open on the bottom. Same with scarves. If you have it in the wrong place and it's not positioned right, it's really not going to get you the result we want. But if it's outside and you're not wearing a mask, it's better than nothing, that's for sure.
Yep. More on the virus, and also, Dr. Mosen, I want to talk to you a little bit about heart disease. A lot of people putting off trips to the doctor, and I think there's some important information we need to share about tests for heart problems. We'll get to all that momentarily. Sponsored by Northwestern Medicine, relentless in their pursuit of better health care. It's 6:51. We're talking with Dr. Kevin Most, Chief Medical Officer at Northwestern Medicine Central DuPage Hospital. And, Doc, I had to laugh because this morning on the way in, listening to the WGN radio simulcast of the WGN TV 4 to 5 a.m. morning news, they played a News Nation story about mouthwash. And this was what you and I talked about last week. And I'm just thinking now, is there going to be a run on Listerine at the store? Because it actually, and do I have this right? It actually was a study that showed that the mouthwash wouldn't cure anybody of the virus, but it could suppress some of the virus, making a person less contagious. Was that what it said?
Exactly. Yeah, it's 100%. You're right there. It's, you know, that's why dentists use it prior to procedures. They know that they can eliminate the virus that's in the mouth and the part of the back of the throat there. But it's not going to cure it, but it certainly makes you much less infectious for a short period of time while the mouthwash works.
Let's talk about heart disease for a minute here. As you've mentioned, it's really not a good situation where people put off going to the doctor for checkups. And doctor's offices, and it's been my experience in dentist offices too, people are doing a really good job of keeping things safe. No need to be afraid to go in and see your doctor or dentist. And there are a couple of things that have come up that I wanted to ask you about regarding heart disease and testing. First of all, I heard a term that I've never heard before called AAA screening. Is that something that we need to all be aware of when we're going in for a physical? What is it exactly?
Yeah, so AAA screening is very important for those who had smoked in the past. So AAA screening, it stands for abdominal aortic aneurysm. So if you think about it, the heart pumps, and then when it pumps out blood from the heart, it goes into this main big vessel called the aorta, which we all have heard of, and that takes blood up to our brain as well as down into our legs. In smokers, unfortunately, and some people with a genetic issue as well, the wall of the aorta weakens, and when it does, it starts to bulge. And as you have higher pressure on a bulging, weakened wall, you can have what we call a rupture. That's a medical emergency, and unless you have it in the hospital, the chance of surviving is very low. So what we want to do is, we know it's higher in a chance for those individuals who smoked. So we're going to do a screening test between the ages of 65 and 75. It's one time. It's an ultrasound. If it's clean, great. If they find a small aneurysm, they're going to bring you back to see if it's growing. And if it grows, then they're going to go in and surgically repair it before it has an opportunity to rupture. So it's a great test for those who smoke. And we say, well, you know, smoking, that, tell me more about that, because, you know, I might have smoked a little bit for here and there. The definition of smoking for this is if you ever smoked a total of 100 cigarettes in your life. So many people over the age, between the ages of 65 and 75 would fall into this. And if we can identify this aneurysm early, then they can go in and correct it without it having a chance to rupture.
What if you're a non-smoker? What if you've never smoked? Do you still need the AAA screening?
No, non-smokers, it's really not recommended unless there was a family history of someone with an aneurysm. And you know that there's a genetic reason for it, because really they have found that the propensity of these cases have been with smokers. So for non-smokers, really not a concern. If you wanted to get it done, it's a very simple, it's an ultrasound essentially of your, if you sit down, and it's essentially an ultrasound of your stomach where they're looking at the aorta. No radiation, so it's a very easy test to do.
Over the years, I've heard people talk about getting an echocardiogram, and I know some people who took the test, and they found that there was something that they needed to really follow and be concerned about. When should somebody get an echocardiogram, and explain exactly what that is and what that can show?
Yeah, so an echocardiogram is an ultrasound of your heart. What often you'll have is if you're listening to heart sounds and you're a normal, I shouldn't say normal, if you're a normal individual, you're going to have distinct heart sounds. We call it the lub-dub. If you just look at it, read about it, lub-dub, lub-dub. That's what we expect to hear. When we have a bad valve in the heart, and those valves are the ones that are keeping blood where they're supposed to be, between going into the holding chambers of the atrium, into the pumping chambers of the ventricle. So when the blood goes through those valves, the valves open and closes and makes a noise. That's what the doctor is listening to when he's listening with the stethoscope. If he hears that lub-dub plus a swoosh, he knows that now blood is going somewhere where it shouldn't be going. So then the echocardiogram would tell him where is that occurring, which valve isn't closing tightly enough, which valve is allowing some leakage to go back. Now, many of these are innocent. We don't do anything about them. We see a little bit of flow. It's okay. But some will show, okay, then you're going to need to hear what people have probably heard. You need to have a valve replacement. And that is because one of those valves has been damaged or calcified. And then we'll also use it to look for blood clots in the heart if people have an irregular heartbeat, something called atrial fibrillation. We want to make sure there's no clots in there that could come off and cause a stroke. We also can do it to check to see if there's fluid around the lungs. And then we also just look at it to see how well is your heart pumping. Someone that has a history of heart failure, we're going to be able to do the echocardiogram to tell us how well the heart is actually working. So it's a very easy test. Again, it's an ultrasound, so no radiation. And it takes about, 30 minutes, 40 minutes. I had one done this spring. It's painless. So if your doctor says, hey, I hear something in your heart that I'm a little bit concerned about, don't be concerned. It's an easy, simple test.
Should it be part of everybody's physical?
Not everybody, but certainly doctors will use it more as people age, or if they come in the hospital with any symptoms of shortness of breath, if they come in with swelling in their extremities, something that they're going to say, hey, I need to have a better look at your heart to see how well it's functioning. Individuals, they're going to have stress tests. They certainly will get it. You've probably heard of something called a stress echo, where they'll do an echocardiogram with you just resting, then they put you on the treadmill, and then they do it again to see how well the heart's functioning.
I feel better just talking to Dr. Kevin Most. Thanks. Have a great day. We'll talk to you next week.
You got it. Take care.